It's Wednesday, January the 24th, and you're very welcome to the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. I was joined today by Harry McGee and Sarah Barden from our political staff to discuss a number of issues. First of all, a meeting which took place last night of disaffected members of the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party called by Bobby Aylward, the TD for Carlo Kilkenny. Mr Aylward was on Morning Ireland on RTE this morning, and he was asked whether Micheál Martin had the right and did the right thing when he spoke about his views on the Eighth Amendment last week.
Oh, he has every right to make his own decision. This is a free vote, and from the outset, to every member of the parliamentary party, this decision was made back, I think, in 2013, that on issues of life and death, that everyone had their own choices, and I have no problem at all with any individual expressing their views, as we all will and all have, and some of us have come out and said our views. But as far as content, that's up to every individual as well, and I have no problem with that. And I did not criticise Micheál Martin for his personal views. All I said is that I'm not happy, as leader of the party, that all views of the party have not been expressed.
So, Sarah, you were covering this meeting that Bobby Aylward convened last night. What do you make of it?
Well, it was obviously very poorly attended. Just 8 Oireachtas members showed up. Éamon Ócuibh led the charge at the meeting, criticising, as he deemed them, unelected officials for choosing members of the party to go on broadcast media, and saying that he believed that people who didn't agree with the leader, who weren't the leader's best friend, weren't chosen for broadcast media. Other members who were in attendance said that they had heard that front bench spokespersons had encouraged other members of the party not to attend. Some members at the meeting recounted pressure being put on them not to attend the gathering. So I think, you know, I suppose Bobby Aylward was put in a position, having flagged the meeting from Friday, that he had to, I suppose, call it and attend it. But it was very poorly attended, and a lot of people within the party were reluctant to go to it because they saw it as a sign of division within Fianna Fáil, and felt that tonight's meeting at the parliamentary party would be the best way to address it.
And sort of, and Michael McGrath had made that point earlier in the week as somebody who is against repeal of the Eighth Amendment, but thought that the appropriate forum, I suppose, is the parliamentary party meeting.
Yeah, and I think tonight we'll see probably a lot more expression of disappointment within the parliamentary party meeting. They have a very legitimate cause for concern. There was a 3-hour meeting last week. Micheál Martin said at that juncture that he was still reading the report, that he had not yet come to a conclusion. He was going through the submissions, etc., etc. Given no indication that just 24 hours later he would address it all. Now, a lot of people have said, and Micheál Martin has said himself, that if he had addressed the parliamentary party meeting, it would have been leaked to the media, and it would have been mangled in its interpretation, and one person would have read into one comment, another person would have read into a different comment, and it wouldn't have had the full effect of his dull speech. So you can understand his rationale.
I can, to a point. On the other hand, I can also understand the criticism that he arguably misled the meeting if he said he hadn't made up his mind, because presumably he had made up his mind at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And to quote John McGuinness, the Carlo Kilkenny TD, he didn't extend the courtesy to his parliamentary party to just inform them that he would be making a speech. Maybe, you know, not going into the detail of what his speech would say, but the fact that he didn't flag that he was going to have, you know, address the Dáil in this capacity has given members a legitimate cause for, you know, for concern and for anger. And so we will see that in full flow tonight. The 8 members who attended the meeting said that they would make their concerns known tonight, but there were also people like Louth TD, Declan Brannock, Dublin Bay North TD, John Brazel, Kerry TD, all these people who are expecting an explanation from Micheál Martin. Now, I don't think Micheál Martin will be offering any kind of an apology to his party members, and I think he'll be quite robust in defending the decision that he made. But I do think that this has sown the oats of discontent within Fianna Fáil, and for the first time there is a real rumbling of discontent against Micheál Martin's leadership.
Harry, is Bobby Aylward right when he says a majority of the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party opposes the repeal of the Eighth Amendment, and a majority of party activists also?
I think he is. I think that if you go back to the Fianna Fáil Ordaish, the most recent one, you'll see that there was one of the sidebar meetings, the issue of abortion was debated, and there was a comprehensive and overwhelming majority against repealing the Eighth. Now, we must add a couple of caveats to that, Hugh. In the first instance, those who went to the meeting would be those who would be most engaged with the issue. And in Fianna Fáil, the people who are most engaged would be those who would be anti-abortion and those who were in favour of retaining the status quo. I'm not saying that the meeting was packed, but I think those who would be who would not have such strong or strident views on the issues might not have felt compelled to go to the meeting. I've spoken to a couple of kind of middle ground Fianna Fáilers since, who said that for them there was no motivation in going to the meeting because they knew that the meeting would essentially, you know, be a reaffirmation of the large bloc within Fianna Fáil who are anti-abortion. But then if you go outside the group of campaigners, those who are active campaigners against repealing the Eighth, I think that if you scratch most Fianna Fáil TDs and senators, most county councillors and most of the party's members, you find that the age profile of Fianna Fáil membership, there's 20,000 around the country, will be older than other parties. And I think that is reflected in their views on abortion. I think that most of them instinctively would be against repealing the Eighth. But there is a liberal wing in the party and sometimes it's underestimated. And I think we see that it has come to the fore in recent months as people have... their views have evolved, and in some cases we've seen very dramatic volte-face or Damascene conversions, as we saw with Micheál Martin, who would have been always associated as being anti-abortion or pro-life, and who has now adopted a position where he's in favour of repealing the Eighth, and not alone that, he's also in favour of regime where there's unrestricted abortion up to 12 weeks.
But I wonder, is there, Sarah, or do we have enough information to know, is there a difference between the level of support for repealing the Eighth in the parliamentary party, the level of support for repealing the Eighth among the members of the party, or indeed the position of voters who vote for Fianna Fáil? Is there a difference between those three blocks, I suppose?
Well, the opinion polls would suggest that the majority of Fianna Fáil voters are against repealing the Eighth Amendment. And as Harry said, we can only, I suppose, get a clear indication as to the grassroots members when they attend the Ardesh. And at that meeting of the Ardesh, it was about 70-30 in favour of repealing the Eighth Amendment. The parliamentary party would be largely...
70-30 against repealing the Eighth Amendment.
Against repealing the Eighth Amendment. And the parliamentary party would fall in line with that. There is probably about 70% of the party who are in favour of retaining the status quo, and 30%, including the leader, who are advocating for some change. I mean, I think... obviously, you know, the people who are on the pro-choice element of Fianna Fáil would say that this is a very much a party in transition. Whilst there are plenty of members, they say, who are in favour of repealing the Eighth Amendment, they're not as inclined to shout it from the rooftops, perhaps for fear of electoral consequences, for perhaps knowing that Fianna Fáil for decades has been the party advocating a pro-life stance and knowing that any change in that position could have consequences for the party's support. But there is a liberal wing within Fianna Fáil, just haven't been willing to vocalise it up until now. And I think Micheál Martin's decision to come out yesterday has seen actually a lot of people. I mean, if you look just... it's only one example, but Niall Collins, within minutes of Micheál Martin's speech, Niall Collins was coming out advocating a very similar position. I think in the next couple of days, tomorrow we will have another full day of debate in the Dáil on this report. And I think you'll see other people like Robert Troy and Barry Cowan come out in favour of change. Whether they go as far as Micheál Martin does remains to be seen. But I do think that there is some change coming in Fianna Fáil.
Is there a possibility that this issue, I mean, Micheál Martin introduced the concept of a free vote, a vote of conscience on this issue, Harry, but is there any possibility that this might cause real problems, i.e., you know, a split or a leadership heave or one of those kind of things within the ranks? There was this petition set up last week by rank and file members. Cathy Sheridan is writing about it in her column on the opinion pages in the Irish Times today. Is there any chance of a rebellion on this issue?
Well, I'm not sure if it's going to form into a rebellion, but what Sarah was saying about what was said at last night's meeting was quite interesting in terms of the tenor of the actual criticism of Micheál Martin, which I think went a little bit further than just opposing his the manner in which he made his speech last week and the manner in which he made his announcement. And it does seem to be to me that there are certain members within the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party who think that there's a kind of a front bench clique surrounding Micheál Martin, who are control freaks essentially, and who are you know, pulling the strings of the party and not allowing those who might have divergent or dissonant views the opportunity And
is that purely a personality thing, or are there policy issues
within any party? There will always be an awkward squad. There will be those who have been left out of favour, or those who have been demoted, or those who have been excluded or marginalised for one reason or another.
And some of the people at the meeting last night could be defined as that.
You could hear a tincture of the bitter words last night, Hugh. There's no doubt about that, and you will find it in all parties. But you have to kind of say that that's an ever-present phenomenon in Irish politics. But sometimes it escalates a little, and you find that that there are splits. And I think that this does have the potential of splitting the party to a certain extent. I'm not trying to overemphasise it, because I don't think we're going to see the Haughey versus Colley kind of dramatics of the early 1980s. But it does identify a potential problem with Fianna Fáil, especially as the party gets bigger. And the party will have to be very careful about those who are in favour and those who are out of favour, especially those who are out of favour, to make sure that they are managed properly so as not to feel marginalised or excluded. And just from what Sarah was saying there, I for the first time I was saying, you know, is there a possibility that Fianna Fáil might be facing that kind of rocky kind of journey over the next couple of years as it gets bigger and as it recovers its position? And I think there is the possibility, or there is the germ there at the moment, as far as
I can. Well, there are a couple of things there. I mean, one is this request by Bobby Aylward, this suggestion that I presume the central party, whoever decides, you know, when you ring up Fianna Fáil and say, you know, we want a representative on News Talk tomorrow or wherever it may be, whoever decides who that Fianna Fáiler may be, they want to make sure that the anti-repeal side is represented in proportion to the parliamentary party. Is that kind of realistic? Or I'm not even sure our media organisations going to approach this debate that way, are they?
Well, I think it's a bone of discontention within Fianna Fáil for a long time. Like, if you look back at, not to take it away from your question, but just if you look back at who represents Fianna Fáil in media debates, you can name about four or five front bench spokespersons who are always put out. In particular, if there's a controversy, you will always see people like Michael McGrath and Dara Cleary to the fore. And then you'll see people like Timmy Dooley and Thomas Byrne, who do every radio show when it's asked of them. And then this has caused quite a bit of, you know, upset within the parliamentary party, in particular for the class of 2016, who want as big a profile as they possibly can. Now, just with reference to this, I think it's quite extraordinary that the anti-abortion side of the party are looking to debate the pro-choice side of the party, when up until a week and a half ago, not one politician wanted to go on the airways to talk about this matter at all. Micheál Martin has made it quite clear that he doesn't want to be to the fore of this referendum campaign, as has the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. And so the idea that you'd have, you know, Billy Kelleher debating Bobby Aylward on, you know, on this very issue, just, you know, it's just not going to happen. And I think as the closer we get to the referendum campaign, the less politicians will be involved in the referendum campaign, the more that civic society will come to the fore. But that doesn't mean that, you know, politicians shouldn't be to the fore of this campaign. They should, you know, you'll see people like Simon Harris,
sure,
Neil Martin, the leaders.
But isn't the case that even if they're involved, they'll be involved as public individuals whose position on the ongoing debate is known, as opposed to somebody who's been put forward by a political party? Because both the largest political parties are allowing free votes of conscience.
Yeah, but the difficulty there is, and the anti-abortion side of the party has a point in this, if you put forward leader of Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin, to advocate or to debate a certain issue, to the wider public, that looks like the leader of Fianna Fáil is advocating a party position or a party policy. And so people don't know, I suppose, the finer details of this. They're not going to look at it and say, oh, Micheál Martin is saying this from a personal capacity, or indeed Billy Kelleher, who's the party's health spokesperson. The wider public will see that as Fianna Fáil's leader and Fianna Fáil's health spokesperson advocating for a certain position, and that will, you know, that will create difficulties.
Is there likely to be a mirror image of this to any degree across the floor in Fine Gael, Sarah? Because obviously there will be people who are against the repeal of the Eighth Amendment in that party too. And will they have similar concerns about being represented and having their voice heard, or is there any possibility of tensions within that party?
No. There are large numbers of the party that are against the 12 weeks proposition. There are a few who are against repealing the Eighth Amendment. If you look at the numbers, I think it's 29 within Fianna Fáil. There are similar figures within Fine Gael, but not as high. The primarily they are based in the Upper House. They're in the Seanad, the Dáil, TDs, and indeed most ministers, senior ministers of Fine Gael have come out in favour of this. So I don't think we'll see anything similar. But look, it's difficult for every individual party. And I think what a lot of people are waiting on within Fine Gael is the Taoiseach to come out and give his opinion and his viewpoint. I mean, yesterday he called a meeting of the female members of the parliamentary party, TDs and senators, at about 4:30 in his department, and he set them all down and he asked them individually what their opinion was. Some spoke in favour of repeal, some spoke against it, some spoke in favour of the 12 weeks, others spoke against it. He took down notes of every single person's contribution, and at the end he said, you know, that women would be heavily relied upon within this referendum campaign, and so it was essential that the Fine Gael members' voices were heard. He's partially having this, you know, this grand listening exercise.
You can't really criticise it. He is listening. He is taking his time. But there is a sort of ostentatious chin stroking, I'll make my mind up when the time is right kind of thing going on, with an inevitable conclusion at the end of it.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we heard when the report came out in the 20th of December, even prior to that, when the votes took place, he was asked what his opinion was. He'd wait until the report was published. The report was published, he'd read it over Christmas, he'd tell us in the new year. New year comes, he'll tell us when the referendum date is set. And so we wait in limbo to find out. But as you said, it's inevitable, really, at this stage that he will come out very strongly in favour of it. And I think he had this grand strategy of he was bringing everybody with him. He was part of this listening exercise. What he didn't see coming was Micheál Martin.
Yeah, Micheál Martin pulled a good one on him. I mean, as we said, it's completely sincere and everything, but politically it was
Micheál Martin would have been aware of its impact. Sure. I mean, that's why he kept stum about it until he said it. He was very aware of its political impact and its resonance. I'm just saying that the motivation or what he expressed was personal, but the presentation was quite political. Of course, it was.
I mean, he wanted the full effect of what he said, and he didn't. The reason I'd say another reason why he kept it quiet was because he didn't want your man in government buildings knowing that he was going in to make this address, and that's probably why he didn't tell his parliamentary party. And he actually didn't tell anyone up until about 30 minutes prior to it, and he came in. He let some members of the media know that he was going to make this speech without telling us what was going to be within. And it's just to go back to what Harry was saying and the question you asked, whether it was politically calculated. To a certain extent, I'd imagine that it was. But to another extent, it was a huge risk and a gamble for him to take, because bear in mind, he's going against the majority of his parliamentary party. He's going against the majority of his party, the grassroots, etc.
It wasn't an easy option.
And by God, he will feel the consequences of it for the next number of days. Now, one thing he did do very intelligently was he came out very early. By the time this referendum campaign gets underway, and by the time that the majority of people start to get really engaged in the question that they're asked, this will be long forgotten. And Micheál Martin has come out, he's made his dramatic intervention in the debate. But when we get to May and we're 3 weeks out from referendum campaign, no doubt Micheál Martin's speech and this internal fighting within Fianna Fáil
will be way back in the moment.
Just before we move on from that, I mean, the thing that strikes me as well, Hugh, is that the Eighth Amendment, which since 1983 has been this huge overriding issue in Irish politics, has suddenly become almost the subsidiary or the minor issue in this forthcoming referendum campaign, because the referendum campaign will not so much revolve around the Eighth Amendment. I think that probably most people at this stage, and given the evidence we've seen from opinion polls, with all the caveats that entail, probably agree with repeal of the Eighth. I think the stumbling block and the big issue of this referendum will be the 12 weeks. And when you speak to TDs and senators especially from those down the country, the 12 weeks thing is a big issue from them. They won't have the people out there won't have the benefit of, you know, having months to deliberate over this, as the committee did, as the Citizens Assembly did, as the Oireachtas will over the next couple of weeks. And that 12 weeks will be a big sell. And at this stage, I can't say with any certainty whether the people
well,
out there
well,
will accept
well,
it or
we
not.
Will also have many opportunities to discuss that over the next week and months, and ultimately I suppose the people will not be voting on the 12 weeks, they'll be voting on repealing the 8th, although I know I'm well aware that politically the two are inextricably linked in most people's minds. But anyway, we leave that subject there, moving on to what we were talking about, the Taoiseach. He drew a lot of attention for his comments in the Dáil yesterday.
It's always been the case that to buy a house you need to raise the deposit. People do it in lots of different ways. Sometimes people go abroad for a period and they get money. They get money from their parents, as lots of us did. They get money through other loans. Sometimes may stay at home for a period and raise a deposit in that way. But it's always been the case that in order to buy your own home, that you have to be able to raise a deposit. With the exception of one period during the boom when we had 100% loans, and I wouldn't like us to get back to 100% loans because we know where that led us.
So, Harry, we were talking about this before we started, and you were saying, this is perfectly normal. He's just saying what the reality is.
Well, I just can't understand. Maybe I have a deaf ear to things, and maybe it reflects where I'm coming from in my life. But to me, he was just stating a fact. I mean, there are tens of thousands of Irish people who got loans from the Bank of Mum and Dad to allow them put down a deposit for a home. He talked about them. He talked about people staying at home. Now, of course, he's not including everybody. He's only including people who come from people who got loans from their parents. Obviously, they would have been better off. But to me, he was just stating a fact. He wasn't kind of saying that this is something that needs to be done in the future, or stating it as a policy. But he was saying that in the past, everybody needed to raise a deposit, and the ways they did it. And then he instanced the ways in which they did it, getting loans from the parents, staying at home, trying to save, and what have you.
I'm going to step out from behind my moderator's microphone here for a second and express an opinion or two about this. Of course, on one level, you are absolutely right about that. And in a way, he's done a bit of a service, because there's an awful lot of platitudinous hand-wringing around the subject of homes and property and the realities of how many people actually put a deposit together. And people tend to glide over this reality of Irish life, that many people do borrow or get significant amounts of money from their parents. But, and it's a big but, what it does also do is it opens a chink of light into the reality of what Ireland is like in the 21st century, when there are huge class divides and huge wealth divides. And if anything, society is in many ways becoming more stratified as a result of the fact of substantial capital accumulations by members of the class of which I'm a member, the middle class, or indeed the upper middle class, who have accumulated wealth over generations and are now transferring that wealth from one generation to another. And people who are not part of that, or who did not benefit from that, are completely shut out, are stuck in substandard rental accommodation forever, or indeed may end up homeless. And what I would say, Sarah, myself, getting down off my podium now, is is that in articulating that in the way we just heard him do, the Taoiseach perhaps has let the mask slip a little bit and gives a fair bit of ammunition to people who say he and his young, bright-faced colleagues at the top of Fine Gael these days are nothing but a bunch of Tory boys.
Well, first thing, I think the thing that struck me was how uncomfortable he seemed to be when he was saying it. It was almost like he said it and then he was going, oh, crap, I didn't mean to actually say that. And he was trying to catch himself back or rein himself back in again. I think, there is a perception that the Taoiseach, I suppose, isn't in line with what the reality on the ground is. One thing that, he was asked for solutions, I suppose, for people who are struggling to get deposits, and that was his essential solution. And I don't think for the majority of people, it's not really a reality going to mammy and daddy and asking for this for a deposit to help you buy a home, because let's face it, a deposit for a home when he was purchasing his apartment in Castleknock and an apartment in Castleknock now are remarkably different. To have to get a deposit now.
And also, I don't think anybody's suggesting that there should be no deposit. As he said himself, the 100% mortgage was a very fleeting phenomenon in the kind of maddest years of the Celtic Tiger. Most people in this country who have bought a house or are seeking to buy a house accepted that a deposit was going to be part of the gig. It's just as you say, the amount of money now has become so unachievable, and you add to that the fact that the people who are trying to amass that money are paying unbelievable amounts of rent, which
absolutely
makes it
really
difficult.
The majority of, like, just taking Dublin City Centre, but obviously this isn't confined to Dublin City Centre, the exorbitant rents that people are paying, it's completely unachievable to then save for a deposit at the same time, and to try and end the ruthless renting lifestyle that many people are in, where your rents are hiked consistently, to try and save for a deposit. It's just, it's not attainable. It just doesn't happen. And so, like, the people were looking to the Taoiseach for some sort of a solution. And if his only solution is to go to the mammy and daddy, or to just go at home and save for a while, for a lot of people, that's not an option. I mean, a lot of people who come to Dublin come from, you know, some part of the country. They can't go back to their mom and dad and commute up and down to their work here in order to save money. It's just not a sustainable option. Politically, what it did was, it was a chink in his armour. I think what Fianna Fáil will be trying to expose, and you've seen it in Barry Cain's comments there to the Irish Independent, he put his posh boy credentials on display with his latest commentary on the housing market. What they will set out to achieve is to show that the Taoiseach and Owen Murphy, who is a TD in Dublin Bay South, which is one of the only constituencies in the country where we wouldn't have a large-scale housing crisis, and wouldn't be something that the TDs would have to face with every single day, is to show that they are not in tune or not in line with the rest of...
Privately educated in fee-paying Dublin schools with posh accents, with parents who had enough money to hand over, be they doctors in Castleknock or whatever their parents were, to set them up for life.
That's what Fianna Fáil will try to paint Owen Murphy and Leo Varadkar as, and they will try to portray themselves as the ordinary, like, hard-working, in touch with the rural Ireland on this particular issue. I mean, you can see that with Barry Cain's comments, and, like, it's something that he has said previously, but referring to Leo Varadkar, is talking about how Leo likes to go for drinks in the Marker, whereas Fianna Fáil likes to go for pints in the local. You know, they're trying to create this image of posh boy Owen Murphy and posh boy Leo Varadkar. And whether it'll work or not, I mean, I don't know. But
what do you think, Harry?
Well, Fianna Fáil can do posh as well as any other party. You know, if you look at the average Fianna Fáil representative traditionally in south of the Liffey in Dublin, they were able to at least share parity in terms of poshness with their counterparts from Fine Gael.
Yes, their spokesman on justice is not exactly a hoary-handed sort of toil,
okay,
is he?
As a solution, it's no solution in terms of raising a deposit. But, I mean, to raise a deposit, one has to save money. And to save money, as Sarah pointed out, in the current environment, is extraordinarily difficult, given the punitive rents. So there isn't an easy solution where the state can suddenly start doling out money. I mean, the long-term solution is for property prices to come down, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. That's going to take a number of years at least to do.
Well, this week's proposals sort of met with something of a giant raspberry from some quarters, haven't they? This week's proposals from Owen Murphy?
They have. Well, I mean, they're just... a Chinese leader in the 1960s asked about his thoughts on the French Revolution in 1789, and he said it's too early to say. The problem with Owen Murphy is that everything that he proposes, you know, we won't be able to say if it works or not for 5 years or for 10 years.
No, but there is a direct criticism, and this in a way goes back to the criticism of Fine Gael, is that they're not recognising that this is a supply-side problem, and that the government and the state need to intervene on the market side, release state-owned land, be more aggressive in terms of developing, and actually affect the market, not just in terms of providing housing, but to drive prices down by intervening.
They announced three things this week. Essentially, there's going to be a cheap mortgage for those who have been refused by banks. They'll get 2% over 25 years, which is an old scheme, but the new fixed 2%, it's like a tracker mortgage essentially for 25 years, and that will help a certain amount of, only 1,000 initially, but hopefully they'll be able to increase that. The second part of that was something that has potential. They are going to start releasing state land to private developers to build affordable housing for people, and the thoughts behind that, or the rationale behind that, is if they release enough state land at zero price, essentially, to those who are purchasing, that might prove to be an incentive for those who are holding on to land to release it, because they know that the price will come down, and they're hoping that it will plateau the price or bring the price down. Just going back to the whole parents thing, I take your point in relation to wealth and those who have accumulated wealth in society. But from my own experience, I know that lots of families, parents, who would have been, you know, modest income, living in modest houses, in modest places all over the country, made huge sacrifices in order to ensure that their kids were able to raise deposit for houses. And my point is that it's been done, and it's been done for a generation now.
But then, Harry, the other point about but the other point about that then is that we have had property booms, which developers have made millions, if not billions, out of, on the back of parents who remortgaged their own houses in order to give money to these people, and that's a crap way to run a country.
It is, but I think at the same time that if you look at it from a practical point of view, as somebody who's trying to raise a deposit to buy a house, it's extraordinarily difficult to save. And as you said, I mean, nobody's arguing against the need to have a deposit, because unless you have a deposit, there won't be any prudential safety net, essentially, for the financial institutions or indeed for the person who's buying the house. And to raise a deposit, I think that sometimes you have to rely on getting a hand from others. And a lot of the time, parents will come into the picture. And I'm not saying that that's a solution. I'm just saying that it's a reality. And I haven't looked at other jurisdictions, but I'm sure that it's a reality in lots of other places, including England at the moment.
Last thought on this, sir?
Listen, getting money from your parents is not a bad thing. If you're able to do so, if you're able to help and assist your children in buying their own home, you know, well, that's obviously a good and great thing. But it's not available to the majority of people in this country. And if Leo Varadkar thinks that that's the solution to assisting those who cannot form the money for a deposit, then he's completely out of touch with reality, because not everyone can go to the bank of mammy and daddy. Not everyone can move home. Not everyone can move abroad. I mean, the reality is most people of a certain age aspire to have their own home. They want to get out of the rental market because it is a vicious place to be in. There's no certainty, and there's no you know, your rent is constantly hiked and so forth. And perhaps you're living in situations that are, you know, that don't suit your own needs, but you're forced into that position because of the state of the housing market. The point is that for Leo Varadkar to tell people that that is the options that are available to them without offering government-led solutions to assist people in that situation.
I don't think he was presenting it as a solution. I think he was reflecting a reality, and that's where we differ. He was too accepting of it.
It's not his job to reflect reality. It's his job to offer solutions.
Sometimes it's
to people.
His job to kind of state the reality is.
It's like the genius of Bertie Ahern, wasn't it? Commenting on how the country was going while he's supposed to be leading it.
Leo Varadkar is, since he entered politics, it's the biggest criticism that has been levelled at him. He wants to comment on and offer opinions on various things, but doesn't put anything forward.
On that happy note, we'll leave it there. Thanks, Sarah and Harry, for joining us today. And that's it for this edition of Inside Politics. Thanks to our producer, Jennifer Ryan, and our engineer, JJ Vernon. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or your preferred podcast provider. You can always find us on irishtimes.com/podcasts, and your views are welcome. And you can mail me with them at hlinahan@irishtimes.com, or you can get me on Twitter. But until the next time, goodbye, and thanks very much indeed for listening.